Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we start learning about the melachas, the prohibitions of working on Shabbos. Melacha is often translated as an act of work, but technically speaking, it means a creative activity. The Torah tells us that there are two parts to Shabbos. There is Zachar, which is the positive commemorations like Kiddush and Oneg Shabbos, and there's Shamar, which are the negative precepts, things we cannot do. The boundary is necessary to make this day special. Anything holy has to have a boundary, or otherwise it really isn't special. And the Torah juxtaposes the description of not working on Shabbos with the creation of the Mishkan, which in our tradition we understand that that means to say that all the melachos, all the creative activities necessary to create the Mishkan are going to be those activities which are going to be prohibited on Shabbos as well. In a certain sense, Rabbi Sacks points out in Parshas Vayakhel that the way that Hashem created the world was to take away from his creative space. The infinite made a finite space where it seemed that he was not present in order for him to create us, finite beings within a finite world. So there was an experiment to be able to make that space for us. And Shabbos is that time where, like the Mikdash in space, the Shabbos is a sanctuary and time in which we contract ourselves to make space for Hashem again. And part of that contraction is the restrictions of the 39 principles as well. These are broken into what's called avos, the general categories, and told us in the subcategories, which are described over here as well. There are also additional isurei derabbanon, fences put around these 39 precepts, which help us ensure that we don't make any transgressions on the primary ideas themselves. So let's just do a quick review of those 39 and then understand what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is trying to do here and then break it up into the pieces. So the first 11 of the 39 are really field work. These are things that were used in the fields to produce a lot of the necessary ingredients for, let's say, the showbread in the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, or the necessary herbs for dyeing. There's lots of different ways these are used. So one is, the first 11 are sowing seeds, plowing, reaping, gathering, that's putting, baking sheaves. And then there's threshing, winnowing, sorting, grinding, sifting, kneading, and finally baking or cooking. Those are the first 11. That's in the realm of field work. Then we have the next group, which is making of the material curtains in the Mishkan. So that is shearing the wool from the sheep, whitening it, combing it, dyeing it, spinning it, mounting the warp. That's setting the two heddles. That's to preparing for the weaving machine, weaving, separating the threads, tying a knot, untying a knot, sewing and tearing. Those are necessary to make the material curtains. To make the leather curtains, it was necessary to trap an animal, to slaughter it, to skin it, to tan it, to trace lines on it, to smooth it by scraping off the hair, and to cut it into shape. Then for making the beams of the Mishkan, there was writing two letters and erasing two letters, because that would be the setting of which beams belong next to each other. Then there was putting the walls of the Mishkan up and down, which involved building and demolishing. And finally, the last group is the finishing touches of the Mishkan, which involved extinguishing, kindling, and Makir Patish striking the final blow, and Hoitzah carrying from Rishus to Rishus, from domain to domain. So six different categories in which the 39 melachos belong to. What the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch does is a unique thing. You see, you can start in one of either ways. You can either say, well, let's examine each of those melachos in depth, and that'll take us a very, very long time. It's a work of months, if not years. But then there's another way that the Kitzur looks at it and says, well, let's start on the practical end. I'm going to lay out the most practical applications of these 39. And so he's not going to address all of the 39. He's going to give us examples of things that relate to those 39. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at them. We're not going to go through all of them. But I'm arranging the Kitzur in the order of these melachos, starting from the beginning. And the practical applications that he suggests, there obviously are many more practical applications. I'm going to limit ourselves to the cases the Kitzur brings, with perhaps a few ancillary examples, because otherwise it would be an endless thing. What we're going to do is we're going to break this up into five different sections, because this is the longest section in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Simon Pei, the 80th chapter in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, is 93
paragraphs long, rather than between 10 and 20, which is the average for the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch. So we're going to break this up into five different sections. And for part one, which is today, we're going to be looking at the following avos, the following principles: Zorea, which is planting, Koitzer, which is reaping, Gma'amer, which is gathering, and Dash, which is threshing. Those are the four that we're going to look at today. Let's start from the beginning. The first one is Zorea. Zorea is to sow. This is the first of the 39 melachos. It involves planting, sowing, watering to induce or encourage growth. And this was obviously a melacha only transgressed where a seed could grow as well. So if you just throw into a desert or a place that would be crushed, the one is not violated as well. And this was done in the Mishkan in order to be able to produce the necessary ingredients for the creation and usage of the Mishkan. So a few basic questions. Can one water plants? So even though the one's not planting, the plants are already planted, this is considered a tolda, a subsection of Zorea. Is it just water? No, it's any liquid that contains water and is good for the plants, which mean to say that, let's say, acidic materials, wine, and those kind of things are not part of the technical Isser itself. One is not allowed to do that, but that would be not part of the actual prohibition. Can we eat outside? Let's have a picnic. So it's better not to eat over grassy areas because it is inevitable that somebody's going to spill something, and if someone's going to spill over the grassy area, it's going to lead to the growing of that area. So that's our first melacha. Our second melacha, and as you can see, is talk about the practical aspects of it rather than all the mechanics of how we got there and the background to it. The second concept is the third melacha, which is reaping, which is kotzer. We're going to skip choresh for a moment. And in kotzer, which is reaping, this is the third melacha, which involves severing or cutting a living plant or vegetation from the place that it is growing. So one cannot uproot or cut or pluck a item as well. And so this has many applications in halacha. A few basics. What about removing a honey from a honeycomb? So this is also prohibited as a rabbinic extension of ketzira, of kotzer. And so one may not remove the honey from the honeycomb. What happens if the honeycomb had been removed on Friday? Can it be crushed to remove it? No, that also is a problem, as we'll see, of dash, of threshing, which was removing good from a mixture of good and bad. What happens if it flowed out by itself? So any of the honey which is the bottom of the honeycomb itself one can take, but anything which flowed out is a problem because it may lead to a person going to crush the honeycomb to receive more as well. If one finds fruit under a tree or in a non-Jew's possession, may one eat them? So the problem is that on Shabbos there's a concern that they may have fallen off on Shabbos itself and may be mukta as such because it is only now in this position once Shabbos started and therefore is set aside and one cannot be used it as well. Can we climb a tree on Shabbos? This is a rabbinic decree that one is not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos because it is inevitable that one is going to break some branch or bud by doing so. Can one swing on the branch? The answer is no. Even if it's a strong branch, even one's not moving the tree, one's not allowed to as an extension of the same decree. What about just hanging a basket from it? So one's not allowed to hang anything from a tree, nor even tie an animal to a tree as a post on Shabbos. What happens if there's a bag which is already hanging on a tree? Can I put things into it? The answer is no. One may not take things out or put things into a bag which is hanging on a tree, unless the bag is hanging from a hook which is driven into the tree. Then one can add or remove things from that bag, but one cannot take the bag off itself. Sometimes this question comes up with hammocks. If a hammock is hanging on a tree, one may not go onto it. If it's hanging from a post peg which is driven into it, that may be different because then it's hanging on that peg as long as it's not going to be moving the tree. If I have a pot plant, can I detach flowers in the pot plant? The answer is no. This is also a prohibition of kotzer. What about moving a pot plant? So most people are not aware of this besides the muktzah issues. If it is a porous or hold pot plant, so let's say it's a hold the bottom, which many pot plants do, or if it's a porous material, let's say wood or clay, not plastic, but wood or clay, then moving it, besides the muktzah issue, is also kotzer, is reaping it because it is getting benefit from the area it is standing on the ground. And similarly, therefore, if one were to have it on a tiled floor and one goes and places it outside on the earth, that would be considered like Zorea, planting it as well. So one has to be very careful about this. We're going to look at our next concept, which is our next av, which is ma'amer, which is our fourth melacha. Ma'amer means gathering. So gathering was, whatever happened is after things had been cut and left in the field, then the people would go to the field and gather them together and put them together into a large piles as well. Now let's go into a few basics. What happens if there's toys or fruit which are scattered around the house or the yard, or it's a bar mitzvah and the candies are thrown? Is that a problem? The answer is no. It's only an isser where the items actually grow. So therefore, if it's not something which is where they grew, that's not a problem. However, one has to be careful if it's a lot of work doing this. So let's say there's a lot of toys around the house. There's a lot of things just scattered around. Then it could be a problem of uvda dechol, of just getting involved in weekday activities, which one should be avoiding. We're looking at the last concept today, the last av, which is the melacha of dash. Dash literally means threshing. This is our fifth of the 39 melachas, and this one is where a person would take the kernels of grain which are covered still with chaff, and they would the way they used to do it, where they would put a board on the ground and they would have the board driven around in a circle over the over the grain, and in such a way one would be able to crush the grain and therefore separating the chaff and the actual seeds itself. That is considered a problem, and therefore one has a problem of removing a mixture of good and bad to separate in such a way to remove the good. This is the issue of dash, breaking apart something to take out, to extract the good parts. So let's just look at a few examples of this. Can I remove the seeds from legumes? So if the pot is edible, there's no problem at all, right? So if I can eat both the cover and the seed, then there's no problem. What happens if it wasn't edible, if the cover, the pod was not edible? So if it's something which is usually removed in the processing process and the one doesn't do that at home, then it's a problem. But if it's you're done at the time of eating, it's no issue. So let's say sunflower seeds. You're allowed to husk sunflower seeds on Shabbos because that's not usually processed as such. It's usually done at the time of eating. Visit Israel. Can I squeeze fruits? So olives and grapes are biblically prohibited from being squeezed under any circumstances. But other fruits, generally speaking, are a problem if they're squeezed into cups or into other liquids. But if they're squeezed onto a solid, let's say like a lemon being squeezed onto a fish or onto a salad, onto a sugar, not an issue. Can I squeeze fruit into my mouth? So if one is holding one's hand above one's mouth, and usually one will throw away the hull or the skin, it is an issue. But if one just places it by one's mouth and squeezes the juice out of the skin, that's not a problem as well. That's a shin, and that's not the usual way of doing it. What if I don't want the liquid? Let's say I want to squeeze a pickle and empty it out into a liquid. In that case, it's fine as long as it's not olives or grapes. Can a nursing mother pump on Shabbos? So a mother may nurse her child directly on Shabbos. If she's not nursing the baby directly but is feeling engorged with a buildup of milk, so she may express the milk but has to dispose of that, because otherwise it would be dash. It would be like she is taking out the substance she needs, which is the milk, and saving it. If the baby needs the mother's milk but is having trouble lactating or attaching, then the mother may express the milk into a container for immediate use of the baby as well. So a mother is allowed to nurse directly, or nurse if the baby can't attach, then directly into a container to give it to the baby. But if it's going to be for freezing and it's a pity to waste this milk, that's not allowed. She can disengorge, but if she disengorges, she needs to do it in a way that it goes to waste. So what some people do is they put a little bit of soap in the container, so that the moment the milk goes there, it's ruined and will not be used as well. When trying to express milk, there are three acceptable ways of doing this, if it's to disengorge or for to get to the baby who can't lactate well. One is by hand or by manual pump. And an electric pump is permissible if it's set up in such a way that it's set up on a timer and the woman will attach herself to the equipment before it goes on. So if it's set up for every 3 hours, the woman will attach herself to the equipment in such a way that when it goes on, she's attached to it, then it is fine. Can I crush ice? One is not allowed to crush ice with one's hands, but one can put it into a drink and it melts by itself. What happens if I'm washing my hands with ice water? One has to be very careful not to actively crush or melt ice. Can I break ice to get water the water underneath it? The answer is yes. Can I urinate in the snow? It is best to avoid because it will almost definitely melt the ice. Can I put congealed fat into a dish? The answer is yes. Even if it melts, it'll mix together, and therefore it is a passive melting and change of state, like it is when one would place the ice into a drink rather than just melting it itself. We're going to stop here. We looked at the four melachas today. The melachas that we examined was Zorea, Koiser, planting and reaping, gathering and crushing, threshing, and we'll see some of the other applications in the coming days. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.